ప్రేమస్వరూపులారా,
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విత్ ఇన్, నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్, ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet. As I always say, I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The month of February has begun. In 10 days from now, we will be celebrating the auspicious and vibrant festival of Shivaratri. The thought of Shiva itself is so elevating, isn't it? I have met many youngsters for whom Shiva is a favorite, and I ask why. And they say, well, Shiva is such an enigma. When you see Shiva, you are filled with the bliss of solitude, the deep joy of going deep within. And at the same time, he's so involved with the world. He has such a beautiful family. And most important, what an epitome of compassion he exemplifies. For the sake of the world, he took the poison himself. He lives for the world. He is in the world at the same time, so beautifully above the world. Wow, Shiva fascinates me. He elevates me. Well, that's what I have heard many youngsters from Bangalore say. Yes, the principle of Shiva is so sublimating. One look at him and you want to close your eyes and be in the bliss that he is all the time in. The eternal bliss of being one with oneself, one with one's true self, the ceaseless and serene ecstasy of solitude. Dear listeners, if you're following outside, inside, deep inside, in the previous episode, we started this discussion about how to be in this bliss of solitude, how to move from loneliness to solitude, and I called it the solo journey. The destination is solitude, and we have to make this journey solo. We have to do it alone. We have to do it with our mind, with our strength, with our heart, with our determination. In a way, it's a journey from the mind to the soul, from being mind dependent to becoming soul independent. Yes, the way you look at it, S-O-U-L or S-O-L-E, whatever way, that's what it is. It is to become soul independent. In the last episode on January 25th, 2018, I shared with you why we embarked on this program. The genesis was a news item I had read recently, wherein Ms. Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, has announced a new ministry to deal with loneliness. So there is a minister for loneliness in Britain. And the article further said, out of 65 million people in the United Kingdom, 9 million people were suffering from loneliness. So that's close to 15% of the population. 200,000 older people have not had a conversation with anyone, be it a friend, a relative, or anyone, for over a month. They are just feeling emotionally isolated and they are feeling miserable. This definitely was something very strange to me. And as I read more about this problem, I found to my shock that the situation in the US is far more alarming. The percentage of Americans who reported that they were frequently or regularly lonely was 11% in 1970s, and this rose to 20% in the 1980s. And in 2010, the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, did a nationally representative study, and they found that close to 40 to 45% of the people in the US now are feeling lonely. So nearly half of the elderly people in the United States are feeling emotionally alone, emotionally isolated. Approximately that turns out to 42.6 million adults over the age of 45 in the so-called most developed country in the world are suffering from chronic loneliness. And the reason why governments are waking up to this adverse consequences of this trend is that loneliness is becoming a huge burden on the state, because the health hazards of this condition are disastrous. The health profile of the nation, of nations, are in danger. And now they are saying it is more dangerous than even obesity or even smoking 15 cigarettes per day, because when one feels lonely, then it just opens the gate for every infection to enter into the body, to enter, thrive, grow, and finally torment the body, endangering the person's survival. Forget quality of life. Living itself is in question. So this is the new health epidemic. And in the last program, I shared how we could easily deal with this problem, which is just a creation of our mind, and how with little shifts in our thinking, little changes in our approach to life, little modifications in our schedule every day, we could bring a sea change in our quality of life and actually raise not just our standard of living, but our level of life itself. So the 4R approach is what I mentioned, which could be one way to deal with this. The first R that we talked about was R, realize. What is it that we have to realize? We have to realize where the source of happiness truly is. Is it in that dream job? Is it in that dream relationship? Is it in that dream house? Or somewhere else within? And I shared with you how if you always look for things outside of us to make us happy, we will only fall into deserts of loneliness and sadness every now and then. And how we could slowly learn to depend not on external stimuli for our happiness, not on Facebook likes, not on the compliment from a friend, but liking our own self by connecting to our own self. And I shared various ways of doing this in the previous session. So now let's move on to the next R, rediscover. So what is it that we have to rediscover? We have to rediscover who our true friend is. And dear listeners, I'm happy to tell you that for this discussion today, we have Brother Amir Deshpande from the Sri Sathya Sai Center for Human Values joining us. I'm really grateful to Bhagwan for making this possible. So with prayers at his lotus feet, we begin this discussion of our journey of being and becoming like Shiva. So welcome, Brother Amey, to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.
Sairam, everyone, and Sairam, Brother Bishu. Very happy to be here once again.
So tell us, before we move on to rediscover, you know, when I just mentioned to you about this topic, and I mentioned to you about, how nations are worried about it, what occurred to you in the first place?
Even I had read this particular news item, and I am a avid watcher of a lot of these late night comedy shows.
Okay.
And a whole lot of them had actually taken up this,
okay,
as something to be, something that very satirical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what hit me the most was the irony of it all.
Mm.
Right? In this day and age of, yep, what we call globalization, and probably the most interconnected world,
yes,
ever, where boundaries are disappearing thanks,
yes,
to the internet,
yes,
that we actually are finding ourselves more lonely than ever,
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I mean, we are in the most connected world as it ever can be, perhaps, in the history of human civilization.
I think the only thing that is left is now actually teleporting, yeah, which is physically moving from, yeah, from one continent to the other, or, yeah, from one place to the other. That's the, yeah, only thing left.
Yeah.
Otherwise, thanks to,
yeah,
webcasts, yes, video conferencing, audio,
yes,
becoming so cheap and so easy,
yes,
Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if someone of your family was living in a far off country, probably you would see them once in 6 months, or you would not talk to them so often. But these days, like every morning and evening, you're over Skype, you are talking to them, you are seeing them.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, my nephews were here a month back,
yes,
and so my grandfather's their grandfather, that's, yes, my father, is, yes, very attached to them.
Mm.
And he was telling them that, oh, I'm going to miss you, and my nephew immediately shot back saying, we have FaceTime. You don't have to miss me. You'll still see me. And it is true. They don't miss their grandparents anymore,
yes, mm,
because they always believe that there is a WhatsApp, there is a Skype or a FaceTime, mm, around the corner. So I think what really hit me with this news item was the irony of it all.
Yes.
So that's what got me started, when you had actually said that let's do something on this. When I think about it, I recall one of the probably a present day philosopher, if you can call him, or just a good thought leader. His name is Simon Sinek, and he was talking about this concept of millennials. So people who are born after or who became 18 at the in the year 2000. Because those were the people, a new set of voters a young generation was coming, and now their voices were going to be heard in the new millennium. So
they are driving the social space today.
Exactly.
Social media space.
Exactly. So the people who were born about 1982-83, when they became 18 at the in the year 2000, and so they are called the millennials. And, he makes a very interesting point. He says, the millennials are probably the most insecure of people in the world today. And he says that that's the most dangerous thing that is going to hit the world, once they become, they go retired. And the reason he says is that there are certain properties or some characteristic features of these millennials. And that is, he says, number one in that is instant gratification. And what he means by instant gratification is, so he says, how many of you, so he's actually talking to a bunch of millennials, and so he's saying, how many of you, the moment you wake up in the morning, your hand reaches out to your phone, and you're checking, for your messages, your Facebook, your WhatsApp, and all of that. And stunningly, everybody raised their hands over there. And he says, this is exactly what I'm saying, that early in the morning, the first thing you want to wake up, and you want to get gratified, or you want gratification from your community, in quotes, whom you think are important in your life. Right. And he says, how many of you, there, it seems that there is a study which is being made that several young, boys and girls actually start off their day on WhatsApp saying hi to about 10 people, hoping that somebody will respond.
You know, the other interesting news, as an aside, sometime we should do a program on that also, is this another interesting news item where the good morning messages on WhatsApp,
that's
especially,
right.
In India,
clogging.
Every 3 days, every phone is becoming full, is running out of space because of the good morning messages.
Not only the phone, in fact, the Google servers, it seems Google is trying to find out a way, because it needs to declog its its server space because of the number of good morning messages that actually go out.
Apparently, this is very unique to India.
Yes.
People do want to wish, but...
Exactly. of course, maybe that is fine.
Yeah.
But the point he was making is the response that you want.
Yes. Why do you do it?
Yeah, why do I do it? So when I say hi to... or for example, he was mentioning on Instagram, you post a photograph of yourself and you're waiting for the number of thumbs up that you get.
Yes.
And if you get thumbs down... You actually go into depression.
Yes.
The youth are found to go into depression because of thumbs down.
Yeah.
I mean, how silly is that, right?
Yes.
So the moment, even as I was thinking about this, the beautiful saying of Swami came to my mind, which is, you're not one, but three.
Three.
The one who others think you are, the one who you think you are, and the one who you really are. And the feeling I got is that the reason why we find ourselves lonely is because we are living out of the first I, which is what others think we are. All the time we are living our life, from the lenses of what others. And so if somebody does not acknowledge my presence, if somebody does not, say a hi to me or a good night to me,
react the way I expect him to react.
Correct. I suddenly feel that, oh my God, I'm not wanted in this world, right? So I think in many ways, if we are able to remove ourselves or not give that much importance to what others think we are and concentrate more on what we think we are and even more on what we really are, I think we will not face, this epidemic
syndrome,
which is called loneliness. So so that was the first thought that came into my life, into my mind. And the second thing about, I myself, about a couple of years back, the first thing that used to happen when I used to get up is my hand used to go to the phone. And ever since I got this, this message, I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Right. In this interconnected world, I'm not having time for myself. Right. And In fact, today it is now established, it's an established disease, which is addiction to internet.
Yeah.
Internet addiction is an established disease. There are rehabilitation centers for
it. Yeah, absolutely. Internet addiction.
Yeah, internet addiction. Can you believe that? So that means, and in fact, you know, my nephew, again, I'll mention, he has a t-shirt which says, the three biggest fears of this generation, of my generation, is the buffering. You know, on his t-shirt is written the buffering, okay, and low battery and no Wi-Fi. You know, and, yeah, and I mean, felt that is so true.
You can live without chai, you can't live without Wi-Fi.
Correct. Probably you can live without a wife, but not without Wi-Fi.
You can manage with just pasta, but you know, data is more important.
So true. So that is the kind of challenge that we are going to face. What if something happens and the internet gets wiped off?
Yeah.
Right? I'm just saying.
I think these days it's like if the phone is not there in your hand, you can't even think actually.
Exactly. In fact, I'll just tell you and I'll share with our listeners something that happened just a couple of days ago, which was, you know, the ashram, the mandir took the decision that even the staff will not be allowed to enter the mandir with their telephones.
Yeah.
Right? And
mobile phones.
That's right. Their mobile phones. There was a little, you know, all of us felt a little, oh my God, what's going to happen? But I think most of us, we were, in fact, just this morning we were discussing that we are actually feeling much lighter now when we step out of the mandir without a phone.
Yes.
And just imagine during the bhajans or during the Vedam chanting, the phone is going off. Though we don't see messages, we know that there is a message coming, and now we are actually free from that.
Yes.
And to a large extent, I would thank all the mandir authorities to have actually clamped this down on us.
Yes.
So much so that even while we are with Swami, why should we need our phones?
Yeah, we don't need it at any point. It is just that it's because, you know, when you think of it as a limb of yours.
It's like somebody has cut our limb, asking us to leave our limb outside mandir.
If you don't think of it that way, then anyway, you're not going to use the phone in the mandir.
Exactly.
It's good it is not with you, actually.
Yes. And it's not that we are spending 15-20 hours in the mandir.
Yeah.
It's just half an hour, 45 minutes.
And if we were able to do it when Bhagwan was there, we used to sit there for 3 hours, 4 hours. The world didn't come to an end.
End, exactly.
Because we didn't see our phones for 2-3 hours.
Yes. Again, I come back to the point that probably, you know, we are so used to instant gratification.
Yes.
Right, we are used to instant messaging. We want
the mind is free, then it wants to see, okay, has anything happened? As you know, has someone messaged me? Or because we don't want to deal with ourselves.
Correct. Yeah, and just this morning, there was one brother who made a fantastic, you know, comment. He said, waiting for WhatsApp messages, you know, or checking our phone for responses is a bit like children wearing diapers, you know, babies wearing diapers. Every 5 minutes, you want to check the diaper because whether it's wet or not.
Oh my God.
So we are literally checking our phones just like, you know, we would check the diaper of a little baby. So that was a very strong, you know, example that he gave. Mm. And he said, yeah, that's what has happened to our lives. Mm. If our phone doesn't buzz for some time, we think, oh my God, has the network gone or is the Wi-Fi not working or something like that. So this instant gratification, I think to a large extent, is the cause for why we feel lonely today. You know, and that is something that we will need to address. So all of these thoughts and many more, you know, were coming through my mind.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, on those lines, you have also this ADHD syndrome, right? Attention deficit and whatever, hyperactive disorders, so many disorders. Yeah, all offshoots of this. I mean, I can never imagine that these were diseases. Some 20 years ago, you won't even think if someone is distracted, it's just that, you know, perhaps his just mind is somewhere else. You do something so that he will just get concentration. But now, and again, another thought which comes, which perhaps lends itself to a separate discussion, and I'll just mention it, is, you know, how sometimes it is now considered in the modern society that it has got nothing to do with that person. Actually, the person is predisposed like that. He's already, you know, it's a medical condition. It's not a psychological condition. You know, you have now theories. So people feel that, no, don't blame the child because, you know, he's disposed already like that. Because I think it's all because of the way the society is growing now. It's a very, very terrifying.
True.
To me, it's a very, very terrifying trend.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure. And the number of such kind of diseases are only growing. They're not going
so
away.
So a child does something which you think is quite ridiculous, you say, don't blame him. Mm. Like, you, every now and then you hear something, you know, kid going berserk, doing something really which the society wakes up and says, how could a kid do this? And then you'll have another group of people who say that, no, he that is just normal for him because he's made that way. Are we really made that way?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, even the way the family system in the West compared to in India, but I must say that even in India we are trying to ape the West. Mm. But our family culture or our family systems were to a large extent were responsible for the way probably we never felt lonely in our childhood because we always had 10-15 members at home.
Yes.
The father and all the brothers and the grandparents and all the brothers would stay together.
Yes.
So even when the parents went off for work, there was always like 5-6 ladies at home.
Even the neighborhood was like a family.
Exactly. Right? Yes. Yeah. To a large extent, the buildings are growing taller. Yes. The apartments are springing all over the place. But we still find ourselves.
Because today, if we have time, half an hour, we will go on WhatsApp and we'll connect with someone sitting in US. But we will not go and knock on the door of our neighbor.
Exactly. I remember Professor Moolchand Sharma, who was the vice chairman of the University Grants Commission. He had come here as a part of the NAC team, the National Accreditation team,
yes,
to the university. And he was speaking to us in the moral class, which happens on the Thursday. And he was narrating a very, very funny incident that happened. He says, one day I went back home. It was a tiring day. It was about 8 o'clock in the evening. I went back home and the first thing I would ask is, he would ask is, where is his son? Assume his son's name is something like, what can we say? Maybe John or something like that.
Okay.
So where is John? He would ask his wife. Generally the answer would be that he has gone for some tuition or he has gone for some classes or some such kind of thing. So that day he said, I came back home and I said, where is John? And he said, John is here in his room. He says, wow, what is he doing at home?
Mm.
So he says, he's playing. He says, wow, that's wonderful.
Mm.
For a father to know that the son is playing is very good.
Mm.
And so he called out, he says, John, come join us for dinner. And there was no reply from John.
Mm.
So he said, is he so busy playing? Mm. How many of his friends have come?
Mm.
He says, no, he doesn't have any friends. No, none of them have come here.
Mm.
So then he says, then whom is he playing with? No, which is that game? you're saying, which is that game that you can play solo, that you can play all by yourself? He says, no, he's playing with the computer.
Mm.
He's playing a computer game.
Mm.
And this is where Professor Moolchand Sharma said that this is one of the things that is, that is harming our society.
Mm.
For the longest time, sports or games was something that you always associated with a group.
Yes.
The smallest game was still with two people,
mm,
where you had yourself and the opponent,
mm,
right? And today, thanks to technology or thanks to whatever we can call it, is we are removing that other person, with whom, and what is it resulting in? You will have people playing tennis, you will have people playing badminton and football,
yes,
but not with an opponent, not out in the ground,
yes,
but in your home, on a TV, sitting, on the sofa, and that's what even leads to something like obesity and things.
Absolutely.
Like that.
I mean, the dehumanization of everything is again a very serious thing, and that's definitely a topic sometime we can take up.
Correct.
So this is
linking up to so many other topics, isn't it? This concept of loneliness. Imagine the child will never be able to live in a society because he's so used to shutting down the computer whenever he wants. If he starts losing, just imagine, what does he do? He just shuts off. He says, I don't want to lose, so I just shut off the system.
Yeah.
Right. That is not what is going to happen to the child when he goes out in the in the society. He will learn. He will have to learn how to lose.
Yeah.
He will have to learn how to drink the the bitter medicine of whether it is sorrow or whether it is defeat or failure.
Mm.
Unless he learns to do that, how is his character going to because they say that it is only in the face of difficulties that you actually start learning.
Yeah.
Success never teaches you.
Yeah.
It only kind of it's like an anesthesia.
Yeah.
Which completely makes you immune to any learning because you are so intoxicated with success.
I mean, only when you learn to turn your setbacks into stepping stones
exactly
for success will you grow. So Yeah, so coming back to this topic, you know, so the last time, you know, I'd shared with the listeners that the first hour, you know, is to realize where our source of happiness is. And, you know, we shared how we have to not depend so much on how many people are friends with us on Facebook to determine what will be the degree of our happiness. We have to see how close yes. we are with our own self. I think, and we discussed various ways to do that. And in fact, I was so happy that a listener also wrote back from Bangalore saying that, you know, this is a topic which really has helped him, because this is something that we all are going through in the current times, and it did help him. So really thanks to Bhagwan that that happened. So now moving on to the second hour, rediscover. You know, it just occurred to me that all the time we look for someone in our life. You know, there is this urge. I think perhaps we are made that way. And the only way we can get out of it is you build that connect. And build that connect right from when you are small, where that connect should be. So that's when I thought, you know, because a child, when a child is born, the child is just smiling. He doesn't need a friend. Isn't it? The child is just smiling, and not only it is he or she smiling, is making everyone else smile. Why? Because it is just connected. It's having its connect, isn't it? So that friendship with oneself, I thought we got to rediscover that.
Right.
Everyone got to rediscover that.
Yes. So either it is oneself, yes. or it is someone who is permanent. With you 24/7.
24/7, absolutely. So that's why I thought, you know, rediscover your true friend. Who your true friend is. That's what, in fact, you know, let me just share this little story. Sometime back, so there's this man who is in the bus, and the bus is about to start. And the conductor says that, whose purse is this? So this purse was fallen in the ground. And so he picks up the purse. And so this man raises his hand. He says, this is mine. So the conductor says, prove it. It is yours. He says, there is a picture of Krishna in it. And so the conductor says, oh, so many people can have Krishna. I mean, what is so special about it, you know? So then he describes his Krishna. The conductor says, okay, but tell me one thing. Why did you put Krishna picture in your wallet? Now, anyone will put their loved ones in their wallet. And then the old man says, you know, that's an interesting question. Let me tell you something. You know, when I was small, my father used to give me pocket money, you know, whenever I used to go out and every week. And I used to buy the things that I like, you know. That pocket money, my father was my hero when I was small. So I just kept my father's picture in the wallet. And then, you know, as I grew up and became a teenager, I had lovely hair. And, you know, people used to compliment me for my looks. In fact, one of my friends said that I should even go and, you know, maybe join to become an actor, join Bollywood, whatever. You know, I was really looking good. I was a handsome guy. So I actually, at that point in time, quietly removed my father's picture and put my picture in, because I was really looking nice. And then, you know, I finished my education, and then, you know, I got married, and she was a lovely lady, so I put her picture in after that. And then time passed, and we had our baby. And my baby was very cute. You know, I could just look. For hours, I could just look at my baby. And so that's what I used to do. So I changed. I put my baby's picture in. And you know what? My son has grown, and he's doing his own thing. He's married, and, you know, he's fine. Well, he's busy in his own way. He doesn't really have that much time for me now. It's okay. And my wife passed away some time ago, and my son is happy in his own way. And, you know, I just remembered something which my mother used to tell me. Krishna will always be with you. And it just occurred to me that, you know, there is no one. And this is the time that my mother's words came back very forcefully, and I just removed all other pictures from my wallet and I put back Krishna. And you know, from that day I'm feeling so good. If only I had done this early in my life, you know, I would not have felt in all these years this lonely. If only I had loved the Lord all those years with the same intensity as I had loved my family, I would not have been so lonely today. That's what he says. I felt it was something very interesting. You know, I think this is something that all of us go through in our lives. We constantly feel that, you know, this person or that relationship is what will give us that fulfillment in life, will make us complete. But what we, many times I like to play on the word friend, and you know, every friend has an end. as Swami says, only God is a true friend. But I think life takes us through till we realize that. But now that we have Swami in our lives, and you know, we are touched by His love, and we are so much moved by His teachings, I think we've got to make that move in our life, isn't it?
That's true. In fact, exactly as you were mentioning, you know, this beautiful Qawwali that used to be sung in front of Swami very often. And is it possible to play that Qawwali?
Yeah,
maybe
right.
Just the first line, which is Mohabbat Ki Kami.
Yeah, sure.
We'll just hear the first the first couplet before the main song starts.
Oh, sure.
Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai zara jhaanko to paoge ki saai paas hota hai. O karishma ye usi ka hai ki duniya khoob surat lagti hai varna aadmi ko aadmi kya raas hota hai.
So that's the introduction, right?
Yes, such a beautiful...
Sai
Bina Rahana Jai. And exactly the point that you were mentioning, that, you know, God is our only true friend. But I think the lines of this particular song, we have heard it like 100, probably 1,000 times. But they are so poignant, you know, the lines, which is, Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai. That is, if we ever feel the lack of love,
yes,
you know, in our hearts.
And loneliness is basically lack of love.
Exactly. So, if we feel that barrenness in our hearts, let us peep into and look into deep into our hearts, and we will find Swami over there. Dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai, zara jhaanko to paoge sai paas hota hai. You know, and I thought that, that pretty much is like the thumb rule that Swami has given to us.
Yes.
Every time he made this song, you know, go back, we didn't think about it then.
Really.
But even after 24th of April 2011,
yes,
when we all missed our Swami, then also this song became even, in fact, more relevant. Because
yes. Yeah.
If you ever think that Swami is not there outside, zara jhaanko to paoge ki sai paas hota hai, means you look into your hearts and you will find him seated over there. So I think this is also a very good solution to rediscover that sai within.
Yes.
Right. So I just thought that it kind of very beautifully fits in. Just to give you a little trivia about this song, which Brother Ravi, who sings this Qawwali very often, he was telling that, in fact, when it was first composed, so these lines were a part of another, you know, couplet, which was found in a book. And when the song was actually being composed, the original words of this particular couplet is, Mohabbat ka kabhi agar ehsaas hota hai dil mein. which means if you ever want to experience love, then look into your heart and you will find, you know, Swami. Of course, it was not Swami, it was something else written over there. Somewhere along the way, there was some translational issues or something like that. It became from Mohabbat ka kabhi, it became Mohabbat ki kami. Okay, and if you actually now look at the changed version, it makes more meaning than Mohabbat ka kabhi. So what the original says is that if you ever want to find love, and now it is saying if you find a dearth of love, which is the opposite of know, so we will always have love in our life, but if we ever feel the lack of it, you know, then let us look into our hearts. So I think this is a very good for all those people. If we ever think that we are lonely, or if we ever think we are not loved, just let us look into our hearts and we'll find Swami there.
Wow.
And if I can continue.
Yeah, please.
What is this Sai? You know, Zara jhanko to paoge, Sai paas hota hai. When I was thinking about this, the Sai itself is the acronym for what Swami has given us, right? So how do you overcome this loneliness? That to find Sai. But what is Sai? Sai itself, Swami says, is S-A-I. So how to overcome this loneliness? Swami has given us three paths of overcoming this loneliness. S stands for service. A stands for adoration or bhakti. And I stands for illumination or jnana. So he is giving us three ways to overcome this loneliness, which is through karma, or bhakti, or jnana, or a combination of all of this. Right? And so, how do we overcome, if we ever feel this loneliness, how to overcome? Swami is telling us that either do service, or, you know, bhakti, or do atma vichara, which is, who am I, you know, that kind of this thing, and you will be able to, you'll actually know who is this Sai. So when I was thinking of service for loneliness, for this particular topic, there are three people whom I can serve, or three entities who I can serve. First and foremost, serve myself. Because Swami said, you know, in one of the discourse, first self, then help. You know, self and help. Swami always used to play on these two words, that first you look at yourself, transform yourself, and then only you will be able to help others. So the first service, I feel, is for oneself. Then the second entity is your immediate family. Right, only when your family is at peace, then only can you you can serve someone else, right? And then the third one is obviously the community. So even the service also starts with the individual, then goes to the family, and then, you know, reach out to the community. So we could possibly discuss how we can serve these three, you know, as one of the methods.
Yes,
the second one obviously being devotion. So many, many examples and are available, anecdotes are available throughout the history of India, Bharat, where we see a lot of saints and sages.
Yes.
They completely gave themselves to that, you know, adoration, to bhakti. So look at the bhakti sampradaya. It's rich with all saints from Maharashtra, or someone like Mirabai, who said, who loved her, you know, her Krishna, and who decorated. And so archanam, vandanam, padasevanam, all of those in the Navavida bhakti.
Yes.
Sakhyam, for example, all of that comes, you know.
Yes, over there. Sakhyam is a very beautiful concept.
In fact, it is the last but one.
The
only thing after that is Atmanivedanam.
Yes, I think that is something very significant, I feel, you know. Swami keeping Sakhyam, then Atmanivedanam, you got to develop that friendship with God.
Correct.
And, you know, and I think there are little ways by which we can do that, you know. Even talking at a practical level, you know, I know of Sai youth and youngsters, you know, who are, as they do their daily routine, they all the time feel, Swami is with me. Okay, I'm combing my hair. Okay, Swami is with me. You know, you can keep talking to Swami even as you're combing your hair.
Correct.
You can keep talking to Swami even, okay, I'm going for bhajan now. Okay, Swami, what bhajan should I sing? You know, you can keep talking to Swami as you're preparing for your exam. You can keep talking to him, you know. I think if ultimately, we just want someone to talk to you.
Yes.
and there's no friend who is going to be there all the time. And there is no friend who is not only there all the time, but who can also bail you out of every situation.
Correct.
So he's the only one who is there.
And if people think that, you know what, that doesn't make sense, because I cannot see Swami next to me. believe me, you try it,
yeah,
and you will start experiencing in the most unbelievable ways. You will start experiencing Swami's presence, yes. And we have heard, we know of so many. I'm sure all the listeners also themselves would have faced, would have experienced His presence in so many circumstances.
Yes.
Why not just make it 24/7? You know that hotline, that helpline, which is available to us. Mm. Just call on Him all the time.
Yes.
Yes. The other way, I thought, probably a little more practical than that.
Yes.
So, okay, somebody say that, I don't believe in that personal God. I know there's a God, but I don't believe in the personal God. I'm not very close to Him for whatever reason. I feel just developing good hobbies, to develop something that can keep you busy all the time, other than, the technology.
And that's what we discussed in the previous episode. You discover, basically you have to connect with yourself. So there are so many classical arts, be it classical music, be it picking up an instrument, be it even pursuing a sport. I think anything that your soul gets lost into, I think those are the different other ways. In the last episode also we talked about, if not anything, just spend time with nature.
Yes. No, and in fact, I think the beauty is that Swami Himself has given us all of these opportunities through all the institutions that He has created.
Yes.
Right? Whether it is Satya Sai Seva organizations or whether it is the schools that He has set up or, all the hundreds of Satya Sai schools which are around.
Yes.
Or even simply giving your best to the community. For example, if you have certain some skill set, right, can you train somebody else in that the same skill set? Tuition for example, tuition classes to help deprived children, or so there are, I'm sure there are several ways and means of overcoming this so-called loneliness that definitely there will be moments in the day, there will be moments in the week or in your life where you will feel there is nobody. And that is when we can go deep within and we can search for the Lord that, we were talking about.
As I was talking to, a senior member of Sai Sanidhi, and I asked him this question, what happens, when you are very alone at times, do you really feel lonely? He said, no, for me, those are beautiful opportunities to actually, spend time with myself. Those are opportunities of solitude. For him, it is like, wow, I want that time.
Correct. I recollect when you say this, I think about a couple of years back, there was some political issues in Telangana and Andhra Pradesh. And so I think Parthi had lost power for something like 16 to 17 hours, and today without electricity, nothing works. So the phones went dead and the TV is not working and the internet is down. Our UPS is in the college and office, everything kind of shut off. And we literally were forced to just sit. And they were the hot summer months, so you couldn't even go out.
Mm.
And I remember those days, I said, Swami, this is a very beautiful way in which you have actually forced us to sit in one place and think about you or about ourselves.
Yes.
We had nothing else to do.
Yes.
So, sometimes you'll be forced into a situation.
Yes.
You better know what to do at that time.
In fact, this reminds me of another instance. There was this brother, Amitabh Dasgupta, who, it's a long story, but I will just narrate what is relevant for this part. Because Swami used to mention in those days, I'm talking about the 90s, early 90s, Swami used to always mention to the boys that, talk less, talk less, talk less, talk less, study more, Swami would say. And, Amitabh always used to feel, come on, he was a dynamic guy. He was actually the athletic champ. And, it was very, very difficult for him not to talk. That compulsive urge to really be with the guys was so high. And Swami, interestingly, comes directly to him and from says, you are talking too much, talk less. And he's like, okay, Swami. And Swami doesn't stop there. Swami says, you know how the sages and saints were? You should be silent like that. And Swami says, it is not just keeping quiet with your mouth. You should be silent in the mind.
Oh, God.
Okay. And for Amitabh, it was like too much to even imagine. And he cannot brush it aside also because Swami came directly and told him, And so he goes back to hostel and he says, why should I do this? You know, why Swami so much after me, and why he doesn't? And what will I get out of it? I don't want to become a saint or a sage. You know, I have no such intentions. I'm a normal guy. And but you know, when Swami has told you directly you want to do something, and finally he says, Swami, okay, Swami, mentally, you know, if you want me to do this, I will do it. But what am I going to get in return? You know, that, let's have some arrangement. Let's have some deal there. And so he thinks of something. He wants to think of something really impossible. You know, something that where there is 0.0001% probability of that happening. Because once that doesn't happen, then you know, then he has the excuse that, you know, you didn't keep up the deal, so don't ask me to do all these things. It's not meant for people like me. And so he thought, what could it be? Getting a Padmanabhaskaram. But those days Padmanabhaskarams used to happen so frequently, you know. Giving vibhuti, it could happen, it could be a coincidence, or me just gave vibhuti. What could be a thing? What could be a thing? And he thought about something which he thought is impossible to happen. Swami should give me a drive in his car.
Wow. That is really rare.
That is really rare. And that he's a school guy. He was in 11th class. Okay. And nobody went in Swami's car. I remember even when prime ministers and presidents came.
Correct.
Swami would send his car, you know, to receive them from the airport. But no one would generally travel in his car except for the person who is serving Swami. You know, so this personal servitor. I mean, Raja Reddy sir, Radha Krishna sir. And so he thought, you know, this is like... There's no way this is going to happen. And so he makes up, you know, but he's sincere. He says, okay, I will keep up the, you know, deal with
my end of the deal.
Yeah. So he starts that and he maintains silence. And actually everyone in the class is stunned. I mean, Amitabh, oh my God, without talking. But he used to talk only when teachers ask, because, you know, we shouldn't be respectful to teachers. So
yes.
that he was doing. And 1 week passed, and he was just controlling us. He was just, you know, he's quite a determined guy. If he wants to do it, he can do it. And so, and then came Christmas, you know. So Christmas morning darshan, you know, in those days, Christmas morning darshan.
The silver door
opening, and everyone, and that was the first time he was also having that Christmas darshan. And he was also waiting for it, you know. 1 week he was also quiet, you know, and now he's just waiting for that darshan. And when Swami came out on the morning, and, you know, people are singing here, Silent Night, Holy Night, all is calm, all is bright. And Swami comes, and Swami in the white robe, shining, such a heavenly darshan. He's so ecstatic. He's so filled with joy. I don't know, somehow it was 100 times more beautiful than what he had imagined. He was completely taken over by that experience. And he came to the hostel, and he was so much brimming with that overwhelming sense of ecstasy that, you know, he just started talking. He just started talking to the class. Did you see him? How fantastic it was. You know, he just started talking. And after 5 minutes, he realized, oh my God, I was not supposed to do this. I have broken my promise, you know. And he was feeling sad that it was just another one more week and it would have been done. But then he consoled himself. He said, you know, I didn't do it intentionally. It just happened. I mean, Swami's darshan was like that. I couldn't not express myself. And after that, he became quiet. But then he was saying there was another motivation for me to, you know, do this. He said, when I had not spoken for that 1 week, there was also a different kind of charm that I had begun to experience, which I had never experienced before.
Mm.
You know, even as an 11, you know, 15, 16-year-old teenager, he says, there was something special about it, you know. I had also actually, in a way, had begun to like it. So there was something about it which I liked also, apart from, you know, keeping up the deal. So that's what propelled him to actually continue with that sadhana. And so he continued to do that. And then came the New Year morning. And so, interestingly, another boy whom Swami used to talk to often in those days was his classmate Pavan. And on 26th, Swami had called Pawan. Swami was really speaking to him regularly. And Swami had told him, you call your parents for interview. Let them come on the New Year day. So he had told his parents to come, I think, from near Hyderabad. But unfortunately, Pawan became sick on 28th. And it was not an ordinary sickness. Suddenly his health deteriorated. I mean, he was having motions, continuous. There was blood in his motions. And it was really terrible. They had to admit him in the hospital. So 28th, 29th, he's in the hospital. And Pawan is communicating to Swami through Amitabh every day. So he's sending letters and all that. Pawan was desperate to come to Prashant, to Mandir. I mean, the whole world gathers in Prashantalam on the New Year day. And Pawan didn't want to miss that. And especially in a time when every day Swami is talking to you. So Swami even asked the doctors, can Pawan come for darshan? Doctor says, no, Swami, his condition is really fragile. He cannot come. Swami says, okay, I mean, what to do? So Pawan is in the hospital. The morning New Year function happens, you know, the morning band and everything. And after that, Swami comes to Amitabh and Swami says, go to the hospital. And he says, where, why? I mean, hospital. Swami says, go to the hospital. I am coming. And Amitabh dashes to the hospital. He was already a champion. He was like, in next second, he was in the general hospital, you know. And Swami says, I'm coming. And Swami has called the car and Swami is there. Swami, in the next 2 minutes, Swami was there. Nobody in the hospital knew that Swami is coming. Amitabh was the only person there to receive Swami. And Swami comes to the hospital. And Swami says, where is Pawan? So Amitabh takes Pawan. He was in the second floor. And so Swami goes up. And Swami spends 10, 15 minutes. And interestingly, that morning, you know, just few minutes before Swami arrived, Pawan's parents arrived and they were looking for him in the hospital. Pawan had not revealed anything to his parents. They landed up in the hospital and they are there and Swami just enters. And then, you know, Swami says, did you have breakfast? And he says, no. Swami says, no, you had breakfast. Swami says, you already had 6 apples. Says, no, Swami, I didn't have that drips. That is already 6 apples. Swami says, you know, Swami converts the whole mood completely into, you know, Pawan is crying. You don't know the tears of sorrow or joy. Never imagined Swami would come, you know. So Swami blesses him for 15 minutes and creates vibhuti, applies it on his head, applies it on his chest and everything. And as Swami is returning from the hospital, Swami also goes to another ward where there is other patients. And, you know, one doctor says, Swami, why don't you bless these patients also? Swami says, okay. And Swami goes that side. Swami blesses a little girl there and all that. And then Swami is getting into the car. And interestingly, the editor of Sanatan Sarathi, V.K. Narasimhan sir, also happens to be there. So Swami asked him, Narasimhan, I go in. So, you know, Narasimhan sir was getting into the car. So sometimes Swami would take him in the car. And then as Swami was getting in, Swami looked at Amitabh and said, hey, you come. So he wondered, like, whom Swami is asking, you know. So he thought maybe the director or superintendent of the hospital has come. So looked behind him and said, no, you come. So he didn't imagine. So he could not imagine. I said, yes, get in. So he got in the car. Wow. And then Swami went for a drive. And now Swami asked him, hey boy, what is your name? So he says, Amitabh. I said, oh, Amitabh Bachchan. I had saved him when he had that accident during that movie, Swami says. And then Swami takes for a drive and all that. And they come back. And only then it hits Amitabh about, you know, what had really transpired. There are more dimensions to this story, but I'll stop here. But why I remember this is, you know, when you mentioned that if you suppose when you didn't have that power for 16 hours, you know, you experience something that you never experienced before. It's like even when we're talking about realize, in the, you know where the source of happiness within, only when you experience the joy of connecting to the soul, will you know how deficient the joy is of connecting to the body. So only when you do this, you know, so you says, okay, even if you say, you know, I cannot live without, okay, you don't live. You know, we are not telling you give up all social media, give up, you know, all this.
Yes.
But just do it for, like, say, 1 week. Do it for 15 days.
Yeah, or I've also noticed to do it any one day in a week for You know, test it out.
Yeah.
Test it. Do it for a month.
Yeah.
Swami, every Thursday, for example, today, it is your day.
Mm.
Right? On Thursdays, I will not speak. Mm. I know of one of our brothers in Radio Sai.
Yeah.
You know, he does not speak on Tuesdays because he says the first time Swami spoke to him was on a Tuesday. And so he says, at least as a remembrance of that, you know, that conversation that he had with Swami, he will not speak on Tuesday.
Spend time with Swami on Tuesday.
Exactly.
Fully.
Fully, yeah. So I feel even that something like that is also, you know, good enough. Just to experience, as you very beautifully put it, to experience the joy of being with yourself far outweighs the benefits, in terms of benefits, the joy that you will have in connecting with the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have to, there are little ways, I think, like this. I think there are enough practical tips. We all have to only, you know, make that, you know, just like someone was telling today, how about just doing something like a Parayanam? You know, okay, somebody does a Siddhi Sai Sacharita Parayanam or anything. I think in the Prema Vahini first chapter or the second, third chapter, Swami says, if you are living, you should be engaged in some sadhana. It's mandatory. It cannot be that, you know, you say that I am on the spiritual path, but what sadhana are you doing now? I don't know. It cannot be like that. Swami says, if you're living, you have to be engaged in some sadhana.
Okay.
I think so. I think if you all have Swami in our lives, and if we say that we want to experience the joy of having Swami in our lives, we want to experience the bliss of becoming Baba, being awareness, bliss, Atman. I think we need to take those little steps, and only then, not only will we move seamlessly, effortlessly, into solitude from loneliness, but I feel what is more important is we'll be able to lift so many people around us, you know, our neighbor or someone else or another friend, our
if
colleague.
If not lift, for sure we will cause lesser problems.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, I think the point that you also made, and I think that is something that our listeners can also kind of, you know, keep in mind, is just like Brother Amitabh challenged Swami, no?
Yeah.
Let us also challenge Swami. Even that is also, I'm sure, our Swami is so compassionate that he will say, okay, no problem. I will show you the power of a spiritual life.
Yes.
Challenge me. Even as a challenge, you take it up. Let us challenge Swami that, Swami, I will do this only for you. You better give me back something in return.
Yeah.
And we will see.
Yes.
Of course, then we have to be true to it.
Yeah.
Keep up our end of the deal.
Yes.
And when you get it back,
yeah,
you better stick to it. Now you will know, right? The experience has come.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a very powerful way of...
I mean, he's a friend. He's your friend. So just be with him as you would want to be with a best friend.
Correct.
Who knows ins and out about you. In fact, he knows more about us than we know about ourselves.
Yes, yes.
I think I will end with one interesting, you know, imagery. In fact, there is also a story related to this, but I think we are running out of time. Maybe we can narrate that in another session. But I remember, you know, whenever we used to have these photograph sessions with Swami, especially in Kodaikanal, I remember even in our 12th class, we used to have this pair photograph, you know, we have already finished all other kinds of photographs, group photograph, individual, now pair photograph. So two people with Swami. So, and I have always seen, you know, whenever you go and stand next to Swami, you know, so we would go and, you know, fold our hands, and stand next to Swami. Swami would, like, you know, he would beat our hands, you know, say, no, you know,
hold my hand.
He will want us to hold his hand. Sometimes he will take himself, you know, hold the hand. He wants us to be that. You know, he wants us, don't walk behind me, don't walk above me, be with me. You know, he's telling, hold my hand. If you don't hold, he will hold. But you got to realize that he's holding your hand.
Yes.
And don't depend on another hand to hold you. And I think that is holding on to him. I think that is what, if you all the time are in that frame of mind, I think we will never feel lonely. If any time ask, how are you? So we have been great. Are you feeling lonely? What is loneliness, man? I'm so... I'm in the bliss of being one with my Sai. I think that is what I feel every Sai devotee should be resonating with, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, dear listeners, I know there are so many thoughts expressed in this forum, and I think Amay and myself, both of us would want to go on talking about this because there are lovely anecdotes just surfacing your mind as you are sharing about, because you can talk about friendship with the Lord till eternity. He's that eternal friend. But dear listener, it would be nice if you share, you know, your adventures with us. Share with us how you discovered that Swami is your true friend. Share with us how you discovered this, connect with him, how you discovered that he's the only one who will be there with you, come rain or shine. Because if we share this eternal friendship that we are having with him, and if more and more people cultivate this eternal friendship, we will be contributing to Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu in a manner that would make Swami proud. So let's do this exercise, and please feel free to share your thoughts, your feelings. And we have still 2 more hours to discuss, and I would just reveal them as we get into the program, but there are even more interesting things coming up. So any feedback on this program, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org, or if there's something personal that you want to share, you can even write to my personal email ID, bishu@radiosai.org, bishu@radiosai.org. And also, you know, today as we were discussing, we discussed about many other related topics. It just came up in the discussion. If you would want us to, you know, take up any of these other topics also, if you think that would that is something that could help all of us living in the current times, you know, with prayers to Bhagwan, we would also want to take up any of those themes, because anything that helps us to lead happier and better and enjoy a higher, not standard of living, but a higher standard of life, a higher level of life, is what we should all be aspiring for. Thank you so much for being with us. With prayers at his lotus feet and offering this program at his lotus feet and thanking him for this opportunity, we bring this session to a close. Brothers Prem and Arvind will now take over for afternoon satsang. Thank you so much. Sairam.